episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have my co-host and friend, Pia Hugo, former sister-in-law of Cheon, a super apostle of Nar, and a missionary to the Philippines. Pia, it's good to have you back and to continue our discussion. Last time we got really deep into the engine of Nar. We were talking about the financial engine, but as we've mentioned a few times, it's far more complex than just that. There's so many wheels and cogs spinning, from prosperity-based messaging to celebrity pastor culture, so many things. This engine has generated a lot of money. It's made a lot of people famous, but the consequences of that are severe. It's created this constant fear among the membership. The members are trained to fear, and that's why they stay in it in many cases. Unpaid labor in some cases. You've got all kind and a wide variety of problems with it. I'll just say it like that. And we went through the financial engine last time. I want to go deeper into some of the relationship aspects of this. We briefly mentioned that there are, if you think of it as cogs in a wheel, you could look at each Nar figurehead as a cog, but there are also cogs going historically that they lift up these gods' generals, and there are cogs going out to the people, which we talked through some of that. I want to go deeper with the people aspect because I think it's really important that everyone understand that the people who get involved with this, they don't get involved because they're looking for something crazy. And I know from the outside looking in, that's I've heard people say it. I know that's what they think. Those people are crazy. That's why they got involved with this. It isn't that. There's something that's a little bit deeper, and I'll say probably more sinister, but I'll say that the people who are involved in attracting membership aren't always thinking in a sinister way. In fact, sometimes they're very sincere. And the people who join it are obviously very sincere, many of them. So I want to go into the relationships just a bit. And I hate to do this, but I'm going to do a deep dive on you because I want the people to kind of separate what is your story from what is the history of the movement, because you were right there with a lot of these people. And I know that it's at a risk. I don't want people to think that you have some kind of personal vendetta, because I talked to you enough. I know that you don't. I want it to be in a way that we can show that the people who join into this movement are really looking to get closer to God. I think that's really, really what a lot of people want whenever they join into this. So your story is important. You went through this. You joined into the New Apostolic Reformation. We're going to talk about Cheon, Lou Engle, some of the names we mentioned last time, but you were in it because you were sincere, and then you got into the system. And here's the key that I think I want to really cover in this episode. The system let you down. It really, when you take a step back and look from a bird's eye view at all of this, it isn't that the leadership let you down, though it would be easy to point fingers at them. It's more that the system let you down, because the leadership get wrapped up in the system and they just become a cog in this motor that spins, this engine that spins. So I want to focus on that, but I want to do a deep dive on you.
Let's do a deep dive. I sent you three photos, John, and I want you to show, if you could, the first photograph of me and Che. And I had a friend who saw this picture and said, I never heard of a pastor water baptizing people without his shirt on. I didn't even realize that. You know, this is his backyard. And this was when I was 19 years old. And I think Che is like, I don't know, 10, 11 years older than I am. So anyway, he was in his 20s, I guess. And this was his backyard pool. And I had just become born again. I had just totally dedicated my life to Jesus. You know, Che was not yet my brother-in-law. I was just dating his wife's brother at that time, but I was already under Chase's spell, if you know what I mean. I mean, he was very charismatic, very strong personality. And I would have followed him to the ends of the earth. And so that's Che. And if you could bring up the next photograph of Lou Engel. So Che An and Lou Engel are best buddies. And they were both pastors of this small church before there was Harvest Rock Church. They pastored Abundant Life Community Church. It started out in the 1980s. And so, so Lou Engel and I have also known each other about as long as I have known Che. And the last photograph I would like you to put up is Rick Joyner. You can't really see his face, but you're just going to have to trust me. That's him signing one of the many, many books that I have bought. He doesn't know me personally, but I guess you could say I was a Rick Joyner groupie. I went to so many of his conferences. I mean, I would literally fly from Los Angeles to Charlotte, North Carolina, just to attend his conferences. And I've read probably a dozen of his books. And his most famous trilogy of books, the first is called, I think it's called The Quest or The Final Quest. The second was called The Call. And the third was called The Sword and the Torch. And I have read these three books together probably four or five times. So I am very familiar with Rick Joyner's teachings.
In talking with you and talking with many of the other people who have came on the podcast and shared their story, I find it really interesting because you joined something that's far newer than what I was in. You joined New Apostolic Reformation. Some of the people who have contacted me and they've shared their story on the podcast have come out of Pentecostalism, Charismatic Movement, New Apostolic Reformation, etc. But there's a common theme that goes through this. It's really, really odd if you take a step back and look at how this works. The mechanics of it, we're talking about cogs in a wheel and mechanics, the mechanics of it seem to fit an architectural pattern. And for me, I just get fascinated when I look at something that is so vastly different and start to see all of the patterns that connect it all. It's it becomes like a blueprint that you can, if you read the blueprint, you can see how the building's going to be built, right? So I look at the blueprint that's being created here, and using you as the guinea pig, you were young, you were newly committed to Jesus, you had a personal connection to the leader, and I want to talk about that in a bit. I'll leave that alone for now. But you were familiar with Lou Engel. You were deeply connected to Rick Joyner through his books and media. In the group that we escaped, my family escaped, we had kind of the same setup. There were many people who were members because simply their parents were. They were born into the movement, so they stayed in the movement. And the same walls of fear that surrounded the new recruits surrounded the people who were birthed into it. I was a person who was birthed into it. When somebody joined, there was a very common demographic, and it matches exactly what you are, were. You were young, you were newly committed to Jesus. That's how it goes in these movements. And there's another aspect to this, which every pattern has slight variations, but some people, not only are they searching for God, they may have something that's desperately troubling their mind or their body. In fact, in this movement, it was attracting a lot of people in the healing revival because there were people who were just simply sick, and that made it an instant demographic. But whenever they actively tried to bring people in, they usually targeted the younger people, and I don't know why that is. My grandfather, in his resignation speech, he accused the Branham brothers of purposefully going after the young people because, according to my grandfather, if you can get to the young people, you can get to the parents. And if you can get to the parents, my grandfather said, you can get to their pocketbooks. That was literally in his resignation speech as he stuck it to them and walked away. Now, my grandfather was committed. He remained in the cult, etc. But he could see that there was this weird blueprint. And why is this? I really want to know. I want to dig deeper into that at some point. But so let's talk about the personal connections. Those who are personally connected to one of the key figures. In my case, my family was personally connected to Branham and his family. We had this thing that made us special. And I use the term very loosely. I call it cult royalty. But when you stop and think about it, it's really a hierarchical system. If you had a personal connection to a leader, you were in. You were the in crowd. And what's odd about it is, it was like there was this worship that flowed uphill to the leadership. The rank and file members, they wanted to access that leader. So they would often go to the people who were in the middle tier. And the middle tier had more access than the others. But the leaders were usually still kind of untouchable because they had to rise above all of this to show their their deity or whatever you want to call it. But the demographic that you were is exactly what I'm seeing in the blueprint. And I find it fascinating.
So these are the three, I'm going to say, major cogs of the NAR machine that we were talking about the last time I was here. So if you could bring up that last picture of the cogs. So as you can see, it's bright, it's shiny, it's well-oiled. And when it is functioning as they want it to function, it's like a beautiful like artistry, you know. The last time I was here, we were also likening the NAR system to a circus. So to use that analogy, on a perfect day, that circus can bring in tons of money and everybody is in their tip-top shape. No one is falling off the wire. No lion is going rogue. I mean, everyone is exactly where they should be, doing exactly what they should be doing. And meanwhile, the circus owners are making a killing.
Absolutely. And for those who have missed the past few podcasts that we have done, in one of them, I can't remember which, I mentioned that there are people who contact me and they say, John, why do the leaders continue to say things that they know are wrong? They've already cornered them in, you know, things that they had to have known were incorrect or just simply the Bible teachings. They, you know, they're so far off the mark when you actually read the book. It's not what they're saying. Why do they continue to do this? And let me say it like this. Let me say it a third or fourth way. What's a good example? Whenever you have a broken bell and every time you ring that bell, a $100 bill falls out, are you ever going to stop ringing that broken bell? That's just the way this works. When you're in this type of movement, if you can get the people to give you money, if you're in a cog in that wheel and it's a money-generating machine, you're going to continue to spin until that money stops. That is how this works. That is what these people are doing. And I hate to say it, but if I had a broken bell that would drop $100 bills, I'd be standing on my deck pulling the heck out of that thing, trying to get the $100 bills out. That's the mindset that people get when they become leaders in this movement. The problem is, I don't stand on my deck and say, hey, God is in that broken bell. That's really where I draw the line, because there's a dividing line between what's good and what's evil. And for me, if you're talking about, here's what the Bible says, and you're teaching, you know what you're teaching is the opposite of what it says. Are you a moral person? I just have to question that.
Yeah.
So in our last podcast, we described the engine and all of the cogs, and we went pretty deeply with Che On, and we started talking about Lou Engel, who was connected to this, some of the other figures that are cogs in this big engine. I want to talk about Rick Joyner a bit. You mentioned his name. I began studying Rick Joyner whenever I started linking Branhamism to IHOP KC, the International House of Prayer in Kansas City. For those who are not aware, who not watched the podcast, Paul Kane was William Branham's protege, and he was advertising himself as another Branham. He became one of the Kansas City prophets, and that birthed the New Apostolic Reformation, really, if you think about it. So he's in IHOP KC in this weird mess that's being created. Well, in that mess, you had the spider webs of apostolic networks. The Morning Star Network was just one stream that was connected to this, but it was a powerful stream because you can go back and find key speakers from Morning Star who are here at key moments in IHOP KC. So I want to go a little bit deeper about deeper into studying Morning Star. What would you? How would you describe Rick Joyner?
My favorite author and speaker. All right. Rick and Julie Joyner founded Morning Star Ministries in 1985 in Jackson, Mississippi. Then they moved to North Carolina and they took over the compound of Jim Baker. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did.
And this was called, of course, back in the day, Heritage USA, once owned by Jim Baker and Tammy Baker. So today, Morningstar Ministries is a multifaceted organization that includes a publishing house, churches, a school, a university, and they hold, like I said, multiple international conferences throughout the year. I was such a fan of Rick Joyner that when my son, who has a background in teaching, needed a job, I pushed for him to go and teach at Comenius School, which is the school associated with Morning Star. And he did. And his highest boss in that school was a man named Chris Reed.
Oh, yeah.
And Chris Reed, an NAR pastor, prophet, preacher, you know, he was recently caught with his pants down. But before that scandal, my son would actually tell me about Chris Reed and how he would never remember the names of the teachers, never tried to develop any kind of relationship with them. And unfortunately, that school was so below, like, standards, the regular standards of education. You know, as an educator myself, and we have a school in the Philippines that we started, my husband and I, that's appalling to me. Like, my son was telling me that he was teaching, like, these third graders, fourth graders, who had difficulty in English, in math, and in history. And I think just in general, sometimes these schools that are run not primarily to provide good education, but to promote and to propagate these false teachings. Like, they would sometimes interrupt, you know, like my son was saying, like, Mom, they keep interrupting my lesson plans. And I'm like, why? Because renewal would break out. like, you know, they'd have these renewal meetings in the middle of the day, like at the high school level, and kids were falling down in the classrooms. And so all the elementary school kids were dismissed so they could be a part of what was going on. And it was driving my son crazy, you know, because he's like, okay, that's great. You all love Jesus. And that's great. You all want to go out there and save the world and save souls and blah, blah, blah. Like, my son, you know, he doesn't belong. He doesn't belong to that school and that church anymore, by the way. He left NAR before I did.
That's so funny that you say that. My wife was also a school teacher. She has her master's degree in special education. She was an actual school teacher, and she started working with the local Branhamite community homeschool group, whatever you call this thing, this consortium they have here. And it started out kind of good. She was doing kind of like you're describing. She was teaching what they really needed to learn and know. But what happened is all of these people came in, they kind of overpowered her and took the reins. And where it ended up was basically they were teaching all of the things that you would hear in church on Sunday. And I even went to one of the one of the families, they showed me some of these little things that the kids were doing, and it was like cutouts and coloring books of the prophet or weird stuff like this. And where it ended up for me is I have this friend who a long time ago, he told me, John, if you look at these people, there are some people who are so heavenly good that they're not earthly minded, and there's some people who are so earthly minded that they're no heavenly good. And he really categorized the two. You're either on one extreme or the other, is what he was trying to say. I take a step back and I look at all of this and I say, what in the world are you thinking? These children need to grow. They need to get an education. If the rapture comes, which is what they were teaching, that's why they were doing this. If the rapture comes tomorrow, what does it matter if they learn how to do their ABCs or their arithmetic? But if it doesn't come tomorrow, they've got a problem because they have to live in this world.
He was the one who told me, Mom, you gotta really do your research about this movement because I don't think this is healthy for you. So thankfully, you know, my son now goes to a different church, and he's actually also a missionary. You know, he's gone a few times abroad with us and with other churches. So my son is not anti-missions and he's not anti-evangelism, but he was telling me, like, Mom, don't you think these kids need to at least, like, learn the basics and so they can be critical thinkers?
Well, that's because they don't want critical thinkers. In fact, I just had a conversation earlier today with this guy. He had left one of the Pentecostal cults, and we were talking about exactly that, the critical thinking. For him, he began his critical thinking in his teens, which he's lucky. I wish that I did. But he started critical thinking, and you run into this immediate roadblock, because if you start asking questions, they think you have an evil spirit, and if you have this evil spirit, they start to put a distance between you and them. It's like critical thinking to them is the most demonic force that exists on the face of the earth. That's really what they do. They think this way. And the problem is, the more they bottle themselves up, the way this guy described it, he says it's like a fishbowl. You know, you're in this fishbowl. You don't really understand what's happening outside of it because you're not critically thinking. And the longer you stay in this bowl, the dirtier the water gets, and you just can't see it. Nothing becomes transparent. You know, the transparency disappears over time. If you eliminate critical thinking, you cannot really survive in this world. And so the way I responded, I was talking about the different scales of the levels of destructiveness of a different group. And those that allow the outreach, those that allow the critical thinking, they're more benign, in my opinion. Those that go to the extreme where you cannot think about what's happening outside of the group, you cannot do any outreach because that's going to engage your critical thinking, those are the ones, in my opinion, that are the most destructive.
Again, as a public high school teacher, I was part of a school that really, and I was in the social science department, we always emphasize critical thinking. We would always tell our students, don't just like accept what we say. You know, I was always very careful. Yeah, I was a Christian, but I would never dream of mixing my Christian theology with my, you know, with my lesson plans. You know, those are two separate things. There's a reason why church and state are separated, you know?
Well, as Bob Scott would put it, yes, there is a reason why it exists, but they all seem to forget how badly it goes. Throughout history, you can look at any group that merges the church and state and tries to take governance and control. It always ends badly. That's one of the conversations we had.
My son, you know, like I said, who worked under Chris Reed, who was, of course, under Rick Joyner, he was actually one of the first to tell me, like, I don't think this is right. And mind you, his uncle is Cheon.
Yeah.
That's Uncle Che to him.
Right.
And I asked him, you know, because remember, we were kicked out. Like, we didn't really go to Chase Church after 1996. So, and if you recall, I actually moved to a more word-based church. So that's where my kids grew up. So my son was never caught up in this charismania.
You know, you mentioned Chris Reed. That's one of the things that really hit me. You've probably seen it. I came across this video where Chris Reed is sitting with Paul Kane, one of the founders of one of the leaders of the Kansas City Fellowship, IHOP KC. And Paul Kane is telling Chris Reed that Chris Reed needs to tell the people, the masses, who William Branham really was. And I was watching that thinking, do they really want to know who he really was? Branham is working with the second in command of the Klan and other notorious figures. Branham, who created Jim Jones, etc. Do they really want to know the real William Branham? That's what was going through my head. But then I started digging a little bit deeper into Morningstar, as I mentioned, and I came across several sermons by Chris Reed. He was high up in the organization. And I came across this one. I put it in a few of my videos, but there he has the stature of a perfect man on the back wall, which is a direct copy of the paperwork that went in the pamphlet that Branham spread as propaganda. And basically it was saying that you go through all of these levels of hierarchy to get onto the higher plane, basically. It was the works that you can do essentially to make yourself the perfect man. And it is the epitome of the carrot on the string relationship. If you can tell the people that, come do what I do exactly what I say, and you will be perfect, you're going to get people to follow you left and right, but nobody ever achieves this. That's really the problem. And when you have a carrot on the string type of religion, and you have people who are always going after that carrot, you now bring them into the machine, the money-making machine, because they're going to start donating, they're going to buy your books, they're going to, come to your meetings and donate, give tithes, etc. That's really, for me, that's really problematic. That's something that I just could not do personally. I could not tell people that they can achieve something that they never will. Even according to the Bible, no man is perfect. You look to the Heavenly Father who's perfect. That's how the Christian religion is. But as we've said quite a few times, it's not Christianity that they're pushing, and they don't really care. If you can get people to come into the money machine, enter in, become a cog in spinning your wheel, connect to other cogs spinning their wheels, and let the money flow through the machine, you can preach till you're blue in the face that this is wrong what you're doing, and if it keeps spinning money out on the other side, well, they're going to keep doing it. Like I said earlier, if you kept ringing a broken bell and it dropped a $100 bill every time you rung it, you're going to continue to bring that $100 bill down by ringing that bell.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the latter rain, charismatic, and other fringe movements into the new apostolic reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support.
So we've talked a good bit about how you were recruited into the New Apostolic Reformation. And like I said, it is almost a blueprint. These are the target demographic of people you're going to go after. Go after the young who are excited about God, bring them into the movement, and start working on the young ones, because they're the fastest spinning cog in the wheel, and they'll generate the most money to come out the other side. That's something that's really, for me, it's really like a blueprint. You look at it and you're going after that demographic. And people say, well, wait a minute, John, what's wrong with this? Why do you say anything wrong about that? Nothing is wrong with it. But think about how the movement presents itself. This is a movement that says, the last of the days are here, our days are numbered, we're soon to either take dominion if you're in the dominious crowd, or Jesus is coming in the Jesus is coming soon doomsday crowd. One of those two, that's how these apostolic network works.
If that were the case, would not your target demographic be, let's go after the people who don't know Jesus. Let's bring in the people and convert the sinners. Let's save the lost. The world is about to die. Let's go after the lost people, not those who are on fire and energetic and can put money into this machine. For me, it is such a problem because that is the target. And I'm not saying it's wrong. You know, people who are energetic, yes, come to the movement. But think of that. If you're energetic for Jesus, would you not be in your own church? And why go after the people who are in those churches and try to suck them out? It's because you want them to join in the machine. They need to be a cog spinning in the machine because that machine is producing big bucks. That's really what it comes down to. We talked about that. Then we talked about Rick Joyner and your son and the school. Very, very similar to describing what we recently went through, 10 years ago with our children. Let's go back to Cheon, because that is an integral part to your story. As the former sister-in-law of Cheon, you have special insight that not many people have, and you have a story that's much larger than this one podcast is going to hold. So we're going to go deeper across the series. What was it like for your son around Cheon?
So I asked him, what do you think about your Uncle Che? And he said, of course I honor and respect him, as my uncle, but I can never agree with his, his doctrines and his theology. And I think I raised my kids well.
Yeah, you did. And, like I said, I don't have anything against the humans that are these cogs in this system, spinning these wheels, it's making money come out the other side. For me, it's the system that's wrong. There are some really, really good people that are caught up in the system. But if you take a step back and if you're a minister or an evangelist in the system and you're preaching doctrines that aren't quite right, and then somebody can tell you, hey, this doctrine's a little bit off here, you have to really question why they're doing it. Why are you spinning your wheel if you know the doctrine's wrong, if you're doing it for the purpose of God? And for me, that's really the deciding factor. Is this a good person? I'm cautious with my words here. Is this a good person who is spinning his wheel and knows that the doctrine's wrong? Or is this somebody who's just got into the system and they're confused and they don't know that the doctrine's wrong? You have to question if they're actually reading the Bible that they're preaching from, but that's another subject matter for another day. So for you, what was it like whenever you were around Cheon? Give me some examples of your interactions.
I remember going from the days when I would just knock on Cheon's office door. This is when he was a nobody. And I'd say, hey, Che, your wife, Sue is whatever. Like she said, lunch is ready. Things like that. So I go from that to having to make an appointment. when I was starting to have problems with my ex-husband because he was so abusive and I desperately needed advice. And, they weren't just my in-laws, they were my spiritual parents. And I had to make an appointment. And I would be told, well, the soonest you can see him is like next week. Meanwhile, I'm desperate. Like I am just like mentally, emotionally, like I am ready to give up. And so, yeah.
Yeah. And that's really, for me, I know I laugh a lot and some of this is funny just simply because I'm thinking of that machine and spitting money out on the other side, this mental image that I'm creating for myself. But it's sad when you think about what happens when you get in the machine. I know good people get in the machine, they start spinning, they start influencing other people, negatively influencing other people, I'll say. And what happens is you get so caught up in the machine that the machine becomes your world. And by this machine, again, I'm talking about the Pentecostal Charismatic New Apostolic Reformation style engine that's running. You're so focused on that machine that you start to lose sight of the people under you. In other words, for the ministers who are caught up in the machine, ministers are spinning in this little cog, making money on the other side. they really have one job. They're the people who are to tend to the sheep, their flock in the church, but they get caught up in the machine and they don't even care about the people. Some of them, they don't even care about the people. People are suffering. People, I know people kind of like you who were in an abusive relationship, and they cared more about the status and the image of the group than they did the person who's being abused. In other words, our group is so holy, our group is so on fire for God, we have the outside appearance. Anybody who looks in at our church, we're the perfect ones, we're the elite, we're the chosen ones, right? But then on the inside, you have people who are bleeding, and the minister knows it. In fact, the person I'm talking about is a close person, close family member of mine. I'll just say it like that. They knew this person was being abused. They knew it. But the problem is they didn't care. They wanted to silence it. They basically told the person who was being abused, what have you done wrong? You've probably done something wrong. You have caused this. And they put it on, you know, the person who's being abused, they put it on their shoulders. I've had multiple family members of that family tell me the same story. So I wasn't there. I didn't see it. But I know from what they told me, their stories all aligned. So I have to believe it. And I take a step back and I look at the person they're talking about. I loved this person. It was a good person. From my perspective, this was a good human being, but they got caught up into a system where they have to have the idea of perfection, which again is the carrot on the stick type of mentality. They had this image and they tried to uphold it, and it was at the expense of people who were really hurting.
I mean, it's one thing for actors and actresses to have many layers before you can actually meet them in person. But why do we have that with our pastors? Like, I don't get that. I mean, yeah, maybe a lot of people wanted to see Jesus, and maybe that's why he was always going up to the mountains, you know, to have a lonely time with God. But that's Jesus. Like, we're just ordinary people all trying to follow, you know, God's word. And I think it becomes very, very dangerous, John, when we start to elevate ourselves and start to think of ourselves as some kind of celebrity.
Yeah. Like I said, it's all about the image. They have to have the image of perfection, because if this is a movement by God, they present themselves as being anointed by God, then they must act and behave like gods. That's why they have the little ye are gods doctrine, these little gods doctrines. They want to show the people that they have moved above to a higher plane. And even, this is the point that I wanted to drive at, even the people who are closest to them, like you were, they almost become untouchable because they have this self-made image of importance. They're still human. They still put their pants on one leg at a time, just like I do. But they, in their minds, because they're spinning in this wheel, they become of the mentality that they're better than other people. And I've seen it, you know, some of the people who I knew personally who became ministers, they changed significantly. They were really, really good people. Not that they're not a good person as a minister, but they changed because they got into the system and the system changed them. The system is the thing at fault. So you were in that situation, which is terrible. I feel sorry for you and anybody else who's in that type of situation. What happened? What was enough to help you break through the fear that they had instilled in you and finally get out of that abusive situation?
When I finally got the courage to leave my marriage and to file for divorce because I feared my life, I was told, you will be out of God's will forever. Those were Sue's words to me, verbatim, forever. And at first, of course, like, who wants to be out of God's will forever? I mean, does that mean I'm going to go to hell? Like, okay, then I guess I'm going to stay. But after a while, John, my life was already so hellish that I remember praying to God, like, you know what? If you're the kind of God who's okay with me being abused like this, then maybe I don't want to go to your heaven. You know, I mean, I was angry at God, you know, and I mean, of course, now I understand, but unfortunately, that's why a lot of these Christians leave these NAR churches eventually, and then they don't go back. They don't go back to any other church, and they don't even sometimes realize that their anger towards the church, their anger towards God, you know, they need to unpack that, because who they're angry at isn't really God. I wasn't really angry at God, not the real God. I was just angry at the God that they presented before me.
Exactly. You and I have had this conversation together offline. I've had it a few times on the podcast, but I do not come down upon anybody who takes a different journey than I have in life. There are people who leave these groups, they're abused, some of them just, they're so shaken and hurt by the movement, they don't want anything that even resembles the movement. And sadly, because they came out of a church, they don't even want to go to another church. There are people who are just, there are people who will never set their foot in church again because they've been bruised by this type of movement. So I don't fault them for that. But like you just said, what they're being told what God is isn't what the Bible says what God is. They have basically created this fictional God that they're worshiping, and it's a fictional God that supports the machine. The machine can keep running and spitting money out on the other side. But that God that they're talking about is a fictional God that they've created, and it's a powerless one. That's the funny part about it. If you leave, your God can't save you. If you go into another religion, your God will never bring you back. If you decide that you're going to, if you stumble and fall, if you do something that is wrong and goes against the rules of the group, you're condemned, you're cut off. And especially if you question, that's bigger than any God can defend. That's the ultimate sin. That's how they frame God in this religion. So when people leave, I don't fault them for the directions that they go, because if God is all powerful, God will lead them back on their journey. So for me, that's a big problem. The other problem that I have is, once you get into this machine, because you're trying to uphold the carrot on the stick type of mentality with perfection, you can't be transparent. Because if you're transparent, people will realize you're not perfect at all. And the perfection flows in many ways. It could be a machine with cogs in of itself. But the way that they handle money, in some cases, it's really problematic. I remember whenever I left the Branham cult and we started going to a new church. In Branham cult, we gave 10% tithe. That was how it worked. But you never knew what your money was going to. You would give it continuously every Sunday, and they would never really tell you what your money's for. And so I'm wondering, is it helping the community? I don't think so. Is it helping the poor people? Well, I see people without food, and I see other congregation members of the congregation who have to help those people. So in the end, where's all the money going? And interestingly, that's what my grandfather and all of the deacons said when they resigned. The whole church resigned in the Branham Tabernacle. They said, where is the money? And that's really, for me, that's a big question, because you go to other churches and they'll write on the, usually posted on the door, or they even give you a pamphlet and say, here is the line item expense chart. This is our ledger of expenses, and this is where all of your money is going. They're just, for me, if you don't have the transparency, how can you have accountability?
Lack of financial transparency. That's why you can't look at my income tax returns. They also don't like having any kind of board, having any real power or oversight. So they'll usually, you know, if there is a church board, some churches don't, but if there is a church board, it's usually men and women who are their friends, you know, the yes and amen brothers and sisters.
Yeah. And that might be the most important thing that you said in the entire podcast. Think about that. If you have an engine and you have all of these cogs spinning, you pull any one off, they all stop spinning, right? Well, you have the important cogs. You have the apostles, the prophets, right? You have the lesser important cogs, the ministers, the evangelists. Think of it like the front of your engine. When your engine, you've got this pulley that's spinning all of these things that are an alternator, you know, power steering pump, etc. You have these very critical components, but you also have parts in that pulley system that aren't really that important. One of them, well, they do have importance, but they're not performing a task. I'll say it like that. One of them is a tensioner pulley. All it does is really just keep the belt on. It's not performing a function like your air conditioner or your power steering. It's just there so that the rest of it keeps spinning. Well, that's what these people are. These, you can call them yes men, you can call them the supporters, etc. They're in a weird category all of themselves. While the upper tier, they're the important ones, they're the elite ones, I'll say it like that. Well, then down at the bottom, you've got the rank and file members. These are the ones who are putting money into the machine. So they have a serious importance, right? We've got this middle tier who are the supporters. They're the ones who say, I was there. I saw when our guru did this great supernatural thing. I was there. I can confirm it. The problem is you have people who are in three categories. The first category, these are people who are truly duped. They believe what the leader says. Somehow they got tricked. They understand that something is a little bit odd and I believe it, right? You've got the middle crowd who, I don't know if it was true or not. I don't think it was, but I'm just going to go with it. And then you've got the third category. These people know it's wrong. They know it's wrong. We have in our revival series, we've gone through some of the weird claims that was in the Latter Rain movement. And we have found people who actually admitted that I was there. I saw it. It did not happen like they said it happened. Think of that. If you pull those people out, the whole engine stops. Immediately, everybody says, wait a minute. If that's wrong, well, what about this other thing? The other thing was built on top of that. We have doctrines that are built on top of these supernatural experiences. So if you think of the big layout of the engine, those are really the important ones, in my opinion, the ones who make the leaders look more than human. That's really what they're doing. And in the end, what it is, the entire system is made to make the engine look good. That's how weird this is. When you go to a church like this, it's not about can we spread the gospel. It's not about can we save the lost. It's all about the engine. Can I keep this engine running?
The Great Commission, of course, that's from Jesus, right? That's an immovable marker. When Jesus said, we got to go and, you know, to the ends of the earth. Of course we do. But I think where NAR has gone wrong is, well, let's help you out. You know, how can you go to Africa if you don't have a private jet, right? So we'll get you that private jet. We'll get you these big buildings. We'll whatever. It's all the fluff. It's all the extras. It's all the, you know, the blending of what the world, you know, is as the world is trying to infiltrate. It's all, they're always, you know, we know this, that the secularism is always trying to infiltrate the pure work of the Holy Spirit. And it's our job as Christians to say no, you know? I mean, how much clearer could Jesus be when he told the rich young ruler, good for you, you've done everything, you've followed the commandments, only one thing is left. Okay, what's that? You gotta sell everything you have and be poor just like me, where I don't even have, you know, a pillow for my head at night. And the guy couldn't do it. And I think a lot of Christians read that and they think, oh, well, I would do it. Like, I will certainly give up everything. Well, that's easy for you to say because you don't have much, you know. Like, maybe you just got out of college and you're just starting out, you know, so it's easy for you to give up stuff. But these men, are you kidding me? Are you really going to give up your $400 million? So it's complicated. It's so layered, you know, what happens within these systems. But really, it shouldn't be, because if we are true followers of Jesus Christ, then we should be able to follow his example of humility and not putting, you know, not worshiping mammon. It's so simple. And yet, I guess for some people, it's not.
Well, it goes to one final point that I'll make. When you're a cog in the system and you're spinning and you've got one job to do, and that's spin your cog, you start to forget what it means to be a human. You start to forget what it means to live in reality. It's all about the system. Your sole purpose is to keep this engine running, no matter what. If you step on toes, if you hurt people, if people are being abused, it doesn't matter if you can keep the system running, because in the end, this is the climax I'm building up to, and it's a weird one. In the end, that machine is actually the God. I'm laughing. It's sad and it's absurd, and I'm laughing because I'm also thinking of this flying spaghetti monster religion. I don't know if you've seen this thing. People who are saying, we believe in this flying spaghetti monster. You laugh at the absurdity of this, but think of this NAR machine worshiping this weird machine that doesn't even exist, just to keep this thing running, because in the end, this machine is, like you said, mammon. They're spinning money out of the other side. For me, I had to pull out. I never made it up to the higher tiers of the machine. I was one of the people who, kind of like you, I knew the family. I was close to the family. And just having that status made me feel, I don't know what the word is. I didn't feel like I was anything because of that. I was still human. I was still one of the people, right? I never had the ambition to be higher up in the machine. I knew people who did. And I've watched their lives after they did it, after they made the climb. Some of them got pretty high. Once they got up there, they changed. And they weren't the same people. I can say that I truly, truly liked those people when they were normal people. And by normal, I mean they were normal cult people. I'll say it like that. Once they got up to the top, some of the things they do, I can't agree with. I could never make the decisions that they make. And in the end, it's all about keeping the appearance and the machine running. So in the end, I can't do it. I'm hoping that something we've said can help people come out of this. If you're a cog in that wheel and you're spinning for no purpose at all, at least find your purpose. That's one of the things you have to do. Find out, why am I doing this? Why am I giving money to this machine, and where is it going? why am I seeing these people flying around in big jets, living in mansions, and I'm excessively poor? We're struggling to keep food for our children. Why do I keep giving them money? Why don't they give me some money back? That's one of the first thoughts that you'd have if you were a poor person who were critically thinking. But the machine takes away your critically thinking agenda, right? You just take this out of your mind. So very sad people are sucked in it. Maybe we've helped somebody. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org and piahugoministries.com. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.